45. He hadn't driven this way for a long time. All the miles he had covered, all the treks up and down the motorway, this was one road he had not been able to bring himself to travel. The road back home. Woodbridge, Nottinghamshire. He and Jenny had bought the rambling Victorian vicarage at an auction, sight unseen. When they got the keys, he realised that they had not only paid over the odds for what was essentially a derelict wreck held together by woodworm and rat droppings, but that the meagre budget they had set aside for renovation wouldn't even cover the cost of replacing the roof. Jenny had wanted to ask her parents for help. Gabe had said no. Harry and Evelyn's wealth had always been a bone of contention between them. Harry had paid for their wedding, a lavish affair which had made Gabe feel a little uncomfortable at the time. But he reasoned that Jenny was Harry's only daughter, and it was tradition. However, he didn't want accepting their money to become a habit. For Jenny, it was too easy. She was used to being given everything she asked for. Gabe didn't want to be a charity case. He had worked hard not to owe anybody anything. It became their first real argument, and it had festered for weeks. Eventually, just to cease the hostilities, he had acquiesced on the condition that they pay back every penny. It had taken them several years to turn the house into something not just habitable, but beautiful. A labour of love. And Gabe had been so proud of their achievement. The hours they spent together covered in plaster and paint, cuddling around the real fire while it snowed outside, and plastic sheets formed makeshift windows. The house that Gabe and Jenny built. It was a dream house, at least for him. Red brick, draped in a glossy shroud of ivy, sash windows, a long gravel driveway and gardens that surrounded it on three sides. When Jenny fell pregnant, life seemed complete. They had put a trampoline and a swing out the back for Izzy. In summer, they filled a huge paddling pool and the slide became a water flume. A home for their family. A home Gabe had hoped they would grow old in. Watch Izzy grow up in. Maybe even welcome grandchildren into. And they had been happy there. Mostly. He had tried so hard to believe that. To put aside the dark feeling that the house had come to represent everything that was so very different about Jenny and him. Their backgrounds, their wants, hopes for the future. For Gabe, it was the pinnacle of his achievements. For Jenny, it was the sort of home she had grown up in. The sort of home he felt, sometimes uncharitably, that she expected. Jenny was a kind person, a brilliant mum, a saint for putting up with him, but he could never quite shake the feeling that he would never be good enough for her. He would always be the boy from the estates who got lucky. One day, his luck would run out. And he was right. The home he built for his family might as well have been made of straw. All the time there was a big bad wolf lurking in the shadows, just waiting to blow it all down. The house hadn't changed that much. The driveway had been paved, two Range Rovers parked outside. The garden where Izzy used to love to run and play had been landscaped with new decking and a hot tub. It had been sold to a professional couple in their 40s with no children. Gabe didn't understand why two people needed a five-bedroom house with grounds, but then all the people with families had pulled out of buying it once they found out what had happened there, as if the house's grim history could somehow rub off on them. As if tragedy were contagious. He stared up at his former home. When the police had arrived that evening, the electric front gates and the rear patio doors were both open. Jenny always shut the front gates. They were both security conscious, Jenny because of growing up with parents who wanted to safeguard their wealth, Gabe because he grew up in a place where people would steal the glue from your gran's false teeth, so you protected what little you had. Now he wondered if someone had ensured those gates were open. Had that been the woman's role? To get Jenny to let her guard down, leave the gates open and let the real killer in. But something had gone wrong. Jenny had died. The woman's daughter had died, and she had run with Izzy. The police had spoken to everyone at Izzy's school, other mums, colleagues at work, everyone she knew. Or at least, everyone they thought she knew. Could your wife have let the killer into the house? Had she arranged to meet someone? Do you know the names of her friends? And of course, he didn't. He had never realized what a stranger his wife had become until she was gone. He didn't know her friends, her routine. They shared a house, a bed, but at some point they had stopped sharing their lives. When did that happen? He wondered. Maybe that was why the word divorce was never spoken. They didn't need to. They were already retreating, ending their marriage stealthily, slipping away from each other so slowly that neither even noticed the other one was disappearing. His phone rang in his pocket. He pulled it out. Hello? Gabriel? It's D.I. Maddock. Yes? He waited. Just to inform you, your father-in-law presented at the police station. He's being interviewed now. A pause. I also wanted to let you know that we have revisited blood and forensic samples taken from the body of the girl we found at your home. Blood and forensic samples. Such cold clinical words. He swallowed. Not Izzy, he reminded himself. But she had been somebody's daughter. Somebody's little girl. And just like Izzy, she had probably giggled at Peppa Pig, written letters to Father Christmas and cuddled a favourite toy to ward off bad dreams. He hoped she was sleeping soundly now. He hoped, despite him never having been big on God or religion, that she was somewhere safe and warm. Gabriel? I'm here. He croaked through a hot, hard lump in his throat. It confirms that she is not your daughter, Gabriel. Okay. It should have felt good. He should have felt vindicated. But he didn't. Izzy was still lost, and even in death this other little girl was being discarded and abandoned all over again. There's something else, Maddox said. The woman we found. Do you know who she is yet? A longer pause. That's why I'm calling. The silence echoed down the line. I just spoke to the hospital. She never regained consciousness. I'm afraid she died 15 minutes ago. He let this sink in. What about the man in the boot? Forensics are still working on it, but no luck yet. So, there's no way of knowing what's happened to Izzy? There may be one thing. Does the name Michael Wilson mean anything to you? No, why? He was killed in a burglary gone wrong 9 years ago. When we searched the database for familial matches to the samples taken from the girl's body, his name came up.
He's her father?
More likely grandfather, and our records show that Michael Wilson has 3 daughters. He tried to process the significance of this. We are now comparing his DNA with the unidentified woman, Maddock continued. I'm pretty certain we'll get a match.
The girl's mother, her grandfather, both dead.
But
you said 3 daughters? What about the others?
Trust me, Gabriel, we are pursuing every lead. Not quickly enough. If Izzy is out there...
If Izzy is out there, and you have to find her...
We are doing all we can.
Right. Along with pursuing every lead. Are lessons being learned along the way, too?
Gabriel, I don't need platitudes and cliches. I need you out there searching for her. We don't have unlimited resources.
You think she's dead, don't you?
No, I didn't say that.
You didn't have to.
We are doing our best. I am doing my best. Is there anything else you can tell us that would help?
He hesitated.
Until the day one of you dies. Do you understand?
I've told you all I can.
Right.
Then let us do our job. He ended the call, just about resisting the urge to hurl the phone out of the window. So near, he thought.
so near to finding all the answers and yet so far. He had pieces of the story, fragments, but only one person knew the truth, and she wasn't talking to anyone. And if the woman had, as Harry said, been caring for Izzy, looking after her all this time, who was doing that now? Who had his daughter? Could he face more years of not knowing? Worse, could he face knowing? Could he face the crushing inevitability of that call when the police told him that they had found her? That they had found Izzy's body? He brought up the photo of Izzy on his phone.
Have you seen me?
Yes, sweetheart, he thought. I see you all the time. In every dream, in every nightmare. But there's so much I didn't see. I never saw those first adult teeth come through. I never saw your hair darken and thicken. I never saw you learn to swim or stop saying lello instead of yellow. You're fading, slipping from my memories. Because memories are only as strong as the people who hold on to them. And I'm tired. I don't know if I can hold on for much longer. He let the tears slip from his eyes. They hit the screen, blurring the picture, until he could barely see Izzy at all.
Going. Going. Gone.
And then his phone buzzed with a text.